Want to have your own business but don't want to start from scratch? Franchising might be the answer you're looking for. Welcome to the Level Up with Nick Lopez Show, the show that brings you thought leaders in business, franchising, and high-performance personal development. Whether you're a buyer, seller, franchisee, franchisor, or consultant, find everything you need to know about franchising right here. Own a business without the pain and financial losses that come with creating it. Find the time, freedom, and financial independence you can have through entrepreneurship. Learn how franchising can help you get there. Listen up and get ready for another episode of The Level Up with Nick Lopez Show.
Welcome to The Level Up Show with Nick Lopez, where we have the absolute pleasure of learning from thought leaders in franchising, business, and high performance personal development. Today's guest is a very talented franchise consultant. He's helped many brands scale across the country, including Lime Painting, but he has a particular knack for talking about the economy, Christian Dadalak, with the Franchise Guys. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Nick. I'm super excited to be here, man. Last time you were on my podcast and now I get to be on yours. I'm super excited about it.
Tables is turned.
Yes, sir, they have.
Yep. And it seems like the economy is turning as well. I'm excited to dive into it and talk to you about it on today's show, help our audience level up. But before we get into that, so many people have thoughts about franchising, right? And most of the time, it's not necessarily accurate in that a lot of folks view franchises as Burger King or McDonald's. It's not always thought that franchising is in a business like painting or window installation or floor coatings, so many other services that are brought to customers all across the country are delivered through franchising, and not everybody raises their hand or grows up saying, hey, I'm going to get into the franchise space, right? Franchising has a way of pulling us in. And so I'm just curious, Christian, how did franchising find you?
Yeah, great question, man. It's something that I like to ask people as well, because it is so true that franchising finds us. We don't necessarily find franchising. So for several years, I'd been a financial advisor working with small business owners, helping them with retirement planning, helping their employees, working with individuals. And through that realm, I met a buddy of mine who he and his brother owned a company that it's not a franchise, it's not a bona fide franchise, but it was a licensing agreement. And he said, hey, man, if you have extra time during the day, like maybe an extra 10 to 15 hours a week, we're looking to help grow our business and we'll provide you with all the leads. You just educate people about the licensing opportunity. And if they like it, they can move forward. And I said, sure. I mean, there are periods throughout the day where I might have some extra time between prospecting and other appointments. So let's do it. And then very shortly, I started to get some good traction doing that. I helped a lot of people move forward with that licensing opportunity. At a certain point, started making more money doing that than I was with being a financial advisor. And I said, well, maybe there's something to this. And then started that in 2019. COVID hits 2020, obviously. And that type of business was impacted. And many people were nervous about getting into that specific type of business. It required an office space. There's no build out or anything. It was a body contouring business. So fat loss, skin tightening type of business. And a lot of people were really uneasy, I think, with that type of business. At least they were sitting on it. So I started to look around. I remember somebody called me. And this is kind of where franchising found me in an indirect way. But one of the leads that we got was, it wasn't the lead directly, but it was a business broker looking for a business on their behalf. And I had heard of business brokers, I guess, but I had never really thought about, I never considered being a business broker. But at that point, I thought, hey, that sounds kind of interesting. Being a business broker, like, what do they do exactly? Is that something that I should be looking into? Why are there people that are doing this? How much money can you make? So I started looking into that. I think I found Transworld and started looking into that. And I saw in their moniker that they helped with business sales, they helped with franchise consulting, and they helped people franchise their business. And I thought, franchise consulting? The heck is that? I'd never heard of that. But I've always been interested in franchising. I like the franchise model. I've seen the movie The Founder. I've read half of Franchising for Dummies, right? That book. And I thought, this sounds kind of interesting. So I started looking around how to be a franchise consultant, found IFPG, the International Franchise Professionals Group, saw that at the time, it was 2 years in a row that they had been ranked by Entrepreneur Magazine as the number one consulting network for franchise consultants. And so I thought, hey, that has some credence to it. Talked to some other consultant groups as well, but ultimately felt like in terms of culture, opportunity, and just the sheer numbers behind it, that IFPG was the right fit. So moved forward, became a consultant, started learning, dove in, really became a student of the industry and the craft, and things started happening pretty quickly. And I've been able to help a lot of people get into business, which has just been a huge pleasure and an honor of mine.
Yeah, absolutely. And to your point about Transworld, oh my gosh, they do such a great job with their search engine optimization. They're always ranking at the top. But yeah, most certainly IFPG is one of the top franchise consulting firms really in the world. And it's pretty neat that that was your first experience when you're looking into franchise brokerage and helping folks get into franchising that are looking into business opportunities. What a great way to start and get launched in franchising. What are you doing nowadays?
Yeah. So nowadays, still franchise consulting. So fully committed to doing that, obviously. And Dan Claps, who's a mutual friend of both of ours. So we co-host the Franchise Founders podcast, where we'll talk to franchise founders like yourself, you've been on, and other people from the franchise space and get their takes on basically all things franchising, how to be a better franchisor. If you're thinking about becoming a franchise, franchising your business, if you want to buy a franchise. So resources for everyone that is just curious and wants to learn more about franchising. So we do that. And yeah, then franchise consulting. And then who knows, maybe sometime in the near future, I'll be buying a franchise sometime soon, because I definitely feel like that's where my heart is taking me.
No way. How long have you been feeling that way?
Maybe about the last 6 to 12 months. And I'll tell you why, if I'm just being completely candid. I love what I do as a consultant. I'm never going to stop that. But you also have to realize that it's like being a real estate agent. You can sell a house, but there's no future value, right? There's a shelf life to your income. It could be a really nice referral fee that you get. But ultimately, at the end of the day, I want something that's self-perpetuating, something where there's, you're building an asset, something you can sell someday, and something that can ultimately run without me. And as much as I love consulting, and I can do this till the day that I die, because it's so much fun and there's so much impact, but it would be really exciting to go on an adventure where I'm not only building something for myself and an asset, but I have an ability to mentor people directly that are in my business, see them grow, create opportunities for them, create local jobs. And then again, like I said, create something that doesn't necessarily need me to run. And that's why I get so excited for people about franchising, because I help them to understand, look, and a lot of people, when they think about franchising, they think this is just buying a job, but it's sometimes it can be. But in many cases, you can really build something special here, and it doesn't have to rely on you 100% forever. And if you want to sell it someday, you can do that. And there's just so much opportunity that comes from it. And so I think that I feel like you can only help people buy franchises for so long before you almost think, well, yeah, I'm telling them how great it is, so I should probably put my money where my mouth is, right?
Yeah, follow suit and enjoy all of the benefits that you just mentioned. So many times, franchising is viewed from a franchise owner standpoint is viewed as which opportunity is best for me. In many cases, it's assumed that, hey, it should even be my passion, right? But there are so many businesses out there that are non-sexy businesses that are very recession resistant. And we've seen that coming off the back end of COVID and, you know, all these supply chain issues and social unrest and election year. And we're definitely coming up on a recession, and some businesses are very prone to the cyclical nature of all those different changes in the economy. And so it's not necessarily about your passion. There's a lot more that goes into owning a franchise business. And the point I'm making, that's about where franchise owners' thought process ends until they meet somebody like yourself and can educate them on some of the things that I just mentioned. But essentially get to and educate potential franchise owner on the fact that, hey, you're building an asset that has value. And so you can sell this business for a multiple of EBITDA at the end of your tenure for owning the business. And so not only that, but it's also paying you a dividend annually. So here you have this essentially an annuity that year over year is paying you a dividend. Granted, all of that is not guaranteed, right? At the end of the day, you have to execute on the process, and that's going to give you the best opportunity to realize that possibility, right? Annual dividends and exit, but you have this upfront cost, and so many times it's viewed as a sunk cost. Well, keep in mind, on the back end, you're also getting an exit for the business. So I always like to share that with new franchise owners as they're building their business plan, they're evaluating the short term and the long term. Start creating that long term perspective, right? I feel like so many times franchise owners are so short term minded, year one, year two, but you know, it's year three, year five. Yeah, this is a 10-year deal here. And so creating that long-term vision, I think, really helps ground. And that's the other side of what you're so good at, which is matchmaking. And so being just that, Christian, matchmaker, helping folks get into business ownership, what are some do's and don'ts of finding the best franchise business for me if I'm looking to be a franchise owner?
Absolutely. I love what you said about being a matchmaker, because what I tell people all the time is, to help them understand what I do a little bit more, is I'll say, I'm like Match.com for franchising, or if you want to be a little bit more crude, I'm like Tinder or something like that. But I'm helping to match you with the right franchise for you. Because oftentimes people will ask, what's the best franchise to buy, or what's the hottest franchise? And I can tell you the ones that are selling like hotcakes, sure. But does that mean that's necessarily the best opportunity for you? Does it even necessarily mean that it's a good opportunity? No. So I think that it's better to almost walk in to the conversation as a completely blank slate. I'm not coming in there with any particular industry in mind. I'm not coming in there with a specific franchise in mind. But, well, and if you are, then what the heck do you need someone like me for if you already know what business you want to invest in and start? So I say walk in as a blank canvas, come in with no expectation and just come in with an open mind. And I will ask candidates I work with all the time, are you really open to hearing about opportunities that maybe you wouldn't have thought about? And that frankly, at first glance, you might feel a little cringy about. Maybe it is some kind of window cleaning thing. And they're like, that doesn't sound fun to me at all. But I tell them to just table that, table those concerns, table those initial reactions. You're going to have an initial gut reaction. But all of us at some point in our life, we've always had something where maybe at first, maybe it was a person or an experience that we thought wasn't going to be fun, but ended up being a blast. There's all these things where our initial perception was wrong. And that's why I tell people, just let's reverse engineer the process. What do you want your life to look like? How involved do you want to be in the business? Do you want to leave your job? Are you looking to get out of your job? Are you looking to try to keep that job, but have something on the side that's semi-absentee? And there's lots of implications that come with that. You're going to need more money. You're going to need to be a strong manager and a strong delegator. So then let's talk about your skills. What industry are you from? And I don't think necessarily the industry, but what is your background? What are your skill sets? Are you good with people? Do you have people skills? I think that's necessary regardless of the opportunity. You need to be able to, either with your customer, if you're the one dealing with the customer directly, you need to be the person that is good with that customer, can make them feel special and comfortable, and you're communicating things properly and thoroughly. Or if you're not the one that's on the front lines, you have a team that you know how to build the right team, lead people effectively, and that also requires people skills. So I think you need to have that. But then depending on the opportunity, maybe they want someone that's more sales focused or has more of a sales aptitude. Or maybe they want someone that really has a lot of business acumen, understands. I mean, everyone should know how to read a P&L, but maybe sometimes you need to know that going in more so than other opportunities. Maybe you need to know logistics and understand that, or whatever it is. And usually it's a combination of all of these things, right? But sometimes some opportunities require that more than others. And then it just comes down to preference. Would you prefer something that's just kind of you and solo? Or do you want to build a team? Do you want a small team? Do you want a big team? Do you want your customer to be the general public and the consumer, or do you want it to be other businesses? Do you want it to be a mix of the two? So there's all these things to think about. Do I want a business that is, does it has recurring revenue? Or do I want something that maybe is like a one-time job, but it's a large job and that could help me to cash flow quicker? And, you know, so there's all these different things to take into consideration. And a lot of it comes into personal preference, but also, like we talked about, I'm always thinking of what's, keep the end in mind. If I want to sell this someday, how am I going to get the best value? How am I going to get the best valuation and the highest multiple? And a lot of the times that's recurring revenue, but there's so many different types of businesses. And some people, if they don't have as much of a runway, Because oftentimes recurring revenue, if selling a $100 a month subscription, that's going to take a long time to build up that customer base. And if you need to start taking income from the business relatively quickly, which you should not have to do that if you're going to buy a business, right? You need to give yourself runway. And even if you do need to take something, I would say take as little as you can so that the business has enough breathing room to continue to grow and grow at a fast clip. But again, these are all things to keep in mind, in my opinion. What do I want? Do I want high ticket sale one time? Do I want recurring revenue? Is there a way to have both? And what kind of support is the franchisor providing? Marketing and lead generation, I find very, very important. Most people want to know, where am I getting my customers? So anyway, without going off on a tangent, but all of these things are critical. And so when I'm matchmaking somebody, these are things I'm asking them. So let's figure out, like, what does your wish list look like? Once we know what that wish list is, okay, then let me go and search the over 600 options I have in my inventory in 70 different industries. And let's whittle down to a few options that I think could be a good fit based on what you've shared with me. And I'm not asking you to go a certain type of direction. I'm just saying, keep an open mind. Let's start investigating. And then I leave the decision up to you. And I'm going to be your tour guide throughout the process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you just concluded there with a couple buzzwords, if you will, you know, to matchmaking, building a wish list and having a tour guide along the way of building that wish list. Clearly, that wish list is tailored for a lot of different things that ultimately relate to business ownership and what's best for you. I'm curious, you've been chatting about matchmaking and entrepreneurship and building this asset through franchising. Are there ever opportunities where you tell somebody that franchise ownership is not for them? That's the first part of this question. Then the second part of the question is, what are some strong attributes in a good franchise owner? So, you know, kind of the back end of you telling somebody that franchise ownership is not for them.
Yeah, it does happen. And I would rather somebody not move forward with buying a franchise than buying something that's not the right fit for them, especially if business ownership in general is not the right fit for them. If somebody is, I mean, I think one clear thing that many franchise owner or franchise partners of ours, franchisors and their franchise development teams will look for is this person going to be coachable? If they're coming in there, if they have an ego, ego is not your amigo. So if they're coming in there and they have a little bit of an attitude or a little bit of a superiority complex where they think they kind of know everything, and that's fine. You're telling me to do it this way. I know what's better. I'm going to do it that way. That's someone that's probably not good for franchising. Maybe they'll do well starting something on their own, but even still, I think that having that level of ego is not going to be your friend. So I think there are some telltale signs throughout the process as you're working with them and as the franchisor is talking to them. I mean, I had a client that I was working with that I don't think they signed the FDD receipt for like a month or something like that. And it just took prying out of them to get them just to sign, to do something very simple. For those of you that don't know, the FDD receipt is not signing the agreement or not agreeing to anything. It's just acknowledging that, hey, the franchisor gave you the franchise disclosure document. Very simple. And for whatever reason, it was like pulling teeth to get that out. And there were other things along the way as well that just led me to believe, and the franchisor too, obviously, hey, I don't think you're going to be the right fit for this franchise and probably for any franchise, because these are very basic things. If you can't follow the discovery process, as you're just learning about the franchise, if you can't even do that and you can't follow simple directions, or you're not willing to follow simple directions, then when it comes time to actually operate the business and listen to the franchisor who has already done this, there's going to be some issues. So coachability, that's a huge, or lack thereof, I should say, that's a huge red flag. If they don't seem to have coachability, if they seem to have an ego, if they're too tied to one particular industry, but their financial wherewithal isn't there, and maybe they're not really fully wrapping their head around something, or there's someone I'm working with right now who's thinking, man, this specific type of business, like this is the only thing I want, and I'm not open-minded at all. And she probably couldn't even tell you what it is about. She just likes the industry. It seems like a fun business. So I think you have to think like a business person. And I think people that think like business people will go through the process the way I previously described, where I'm thinking about the attributes of the business, not necessarily the business itself, at least at first. Yes, you have to be in a viable industry. Yes, you need to love the franchisor and the opportunity, but do the attributes of that type of business make sense for what you're trying to accomplish? And if you're not thinking that way, then maybe you're the type of person that shouldn't be moving forward now, or maybe even ever. So there's all these different things. But I think on the flip side, yeah, coachability, if they have leadership skills, are critical, either to lead your customer, if you're like a one-man show and you're leading the customer through the process and helping them make a decision, or you're leading it and building a team and building a culture. Something an old mentor of mine is, he said to me, managers are a dime a dozen. You could find someone to manage, but really leaders pull, managers push. And true leaders are able to get the best out of people, and they're able to build teams and inspire people. They inspire, they don't require, you know, all these little cliche kind of sayings, but it's true. And so I think that person who has, you don't have to be the most charismatic person, but do you treat people right? Are you the person that's going to be yelling at your team if they make a mistake, or you give them a little bit of grace and you're going to mentor them and coach them, and you want them to be able to make decisions? You're able to delegate, you're comfortable with delegating, or you're at least willing to learn. I think having some level of sales skills is important. I don't think you need to be Mr. Joe, the closer, who's going to knock down your door and make 100 cold calls a day, but you do need to be the number one promoter of your business. You need to be out there in the community networking, letting people know what you do. You need to be able to be excited about it. Tell people about it at cocktail parties. You need to be the number one promoter and get excited. So if that person is just here and I'm just here to write a check and then collect a check, and your heart's not in it, and I can feel that, and the franchisor can feel that especially, then yeah, probably not a good fit. But the person that does have those things, and I'm sure other things I haven't mentioned as well, that's the person that should move forward.
You said so many great nuggets there, but you really talked around coachability in so many different ways. If you go back to the soundbite of me talking about building an asset that has value, the caveat I gave there is, or the closer you fit and execute on the business plan, the particular roadmap, blueprint, a lot of skills and attributes that franchise owners bring to a franchise system, but that is very much a skill, right? Coming into a new culture, a new way, a new life, a new family, these are a lot of learning curves, and you have to adapt to all those different things. And ultimately, that is what is probably the most beneficial part of a franchise, is that you're in business with other business owners that have mastered a particular way of doing business. And that's where all the failures and figuring out the business that takes so many years and so many lost resources. I talk so much about the best business owners, whether they're franchise owners or not, have so much humility, and humility really transfers into coachability. But yeah, I mean, this sense of genius that come into a franchise and you put your genius hat on and all of a sudden you're going to be that X factor, that is a formula that will set you back. And so the quicker you can do the complete opposite, exercise a lot of humility and get to a point where you're on the stage at the annual conference, then you can start contributing to the way in which that franchise does business. And maybe you even get more involved, join the Franchise Advisory Council or different committees within the franchise. But ultimately, you have to bleed the ins and outs of that business. So Christian, we're talking so much about business here and franchise ownership. Earlier, we were talking about a part of this wish list is the economy and how are businesses going to do in different economic changes and so much that goes into operating a business beyond just the people skills and blueprint, but specifically the economy. Why are you so passionate about studying the economy? And why is that so important to business ownership?
Yeah, absolutely, man. Well, I think for me, one of the biggest reasons I'm so passionate about it is because, I mean, having been in the financial world, I know how ugly the financial world is, which is one reason I didn't necessarily want to stay there. There's a lot of misleading and there's regulation around it, but there's still ways that people mislead. And I don't like being lied to. I know other people don't like being lied to. Integrity is very important to me. And I see a lot of bad advice flying around coming out of the mouths of people that frankly, I know, and I know that they know, they don't know what they're talking about, but they're sharing information that at the end of the day helps them sell more of whatever they're selling. And I can think of many professionals, especially right now in the market cycle, that are doing this. And I'm not hating on anybody because I have friends in all of these different industries. And I think there's really great professionals in each of these categories that help people. But I can think of a lot of realtors making really unfounded, what I would call in many cases, dangerous claims right now. I would think of financial advisors doing the same, people in crypto with the whole FTX scandal. So I don't want people to get hurt. I'm not telling people what to or what not to do, where to put money, where not to put money, what businesses to invest in, what not businesses to invest. But as a consultant and really as a business advisor, I want to give people the resources and the knowledge and the education so that they can make an informed decision based on themselves, their situation, what makes the most sense. So that's why I'm passionate about studying the economy. And I'll preface this by saying, no, I'm not classically formally trained economist, which I think is actually a good thing because most of the ones that are get things wrong again and again and again. But we can talk about some resources that I think are good to for people to turn to learn about the economy and just get educated, right? Because with business ownership, at the end of the day, you can only focus on, you should only focus on what you can control. You can't control the economy. You can't control what the federal government's doing. You can't control what the Fed is doing and what the monetary policy ends up being. We can't control any of that. That's beyond our control. So I'm not saying get your panties up in a bunch and get all frustrated about what's going on, but just be aware of what's happening. And there are always these leading indicators where you can see a little bit what's coming down the pike. I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist or a genius, I think, to see that, okay, a recession's coming. And we can argue about the depth of the recession, how bad or how mild it's going to be, but it's coming. And in my opinion, it's already here. So I think in terms of business ownership, it's less so about trying to change the fact that this is the economic landscape that we're marching into, but how do I weather that storm? And then I think a lot of people that I want people that have it in their heart to start a business. I don't want them to shy away from starting a business just because there's going to be some challenges ahead. Because there's going to be challenges regardless of where you fall. The corporate world, there's going to be lots of layoffs. There already are. Look at tech. I could just name off. I could rattle off company after company after company. And so there's going to be challenges regardless. So choose your challenge. And I think the best thing you can do is to take your life into your own hands. And at least with the business, yes, there's risk. Yes, there's challenges. But if you take things into your own hands and you're a competent person with good skill sets, maybe a good network, and you're a good person, I think that you can really succeed in an economy like what we're heading into. If you're going in with your eyes wide open, you're not wearing rose-colored glasses, you're understanding the economic landscape, you're educating yourself. And if you're not already in business, you're choosing a business that is more likely to fare better during a recession than one that isn't.
Yeah. I mean, my gosh, who would think to get out of corporate America, right? For so long, you probably have these reservations and these thoughts in the back of your mind about the bureaucracy and the nuances of the corporate life. And on the other side, you very well could be thinking about business ownership and the realities of what entrepreneurship provides you: time, independence, freedom, obviously an annuity, and a lifestyle that could ultimately level up, pun intended there, your quality of life. And so obviously working with a matchmaker like yourself and navigating, having a tour guide as you build this wish list, and the economy is such a critical part of that. What is the current state of the economy and where are we headed in 2023? As we're in Q4 of 2022, where are we now and where are we going?
Yeah, it's a great question. And again, I'll start off by saying, I try not to be a complete like economic market prognosticator because I don't know exactly what's going to happen. Most people don't. Anyone that says they do is probably lying or selling something. But I do think that there are people that can look at a lot of the, again, the leading indicators and that have an understanding of the history of where markets have been in the past, the economy as a whole, and they're looking at the relevant similarities and dissimilarities to other time periods, for example. I mean, where are we at right now? Well, we have over $31 trillion of national debt. We have inflation that is, I think the October number was 7.7%. And that's if we accept the official number and the way that the consumer price index, which is the general measure of inflation, the way that that is calculated is, in my mind, and almost objectively, I mean, I would argue that objectively it is, it's falsified and it's very misleading and disingenuous. I think inflation is probably closer to 16%+. And so historically, if we look back at the late 70s and early 80s, last time we had peak inflation like this, real inflation back then, and this is when we calculated CPI the way that was more trustworthy, inflation was over 14%. And so what did Chairman Volcker, who was the chairman of the Fed at the time, what did he do to tamp down on inflation? Well, he raised the federal funds rates over 20%, which is why mortgage rates were so high at the time, obviously. And what that did was, yes, there was a lot of pain involved, and that naturally did plunge us into recession. The economy did slow. Lending was drying up a little bit. there were job and layoffs because companies didn't have as many resources. It sucked liquidity out of the economy, but that's what needed to happen to get the inflation fire to stop roaring. And so when you think about where we're at today, let's assume that the inflation number is 7.7%, right? Which I don't think it is, but let's take them at their word and let's take it at face value. Well, the federal funds right now, if I'm not mistaken, at the time of this recording is around 3.75%, I believe, or maybe 3.25%. Something in there, but the idea is the same. Well, if inflation is 7.7%, we're at 3.75% federal funds rate. We have a long way to go. The real interest rate needs to be above what the inflation rate is. So I think that the interest rate does need to go up to ultimately tamp down on inflation. But here's where I'm unsure though. And this is where I won't say I know what's going to happen because we're in a rock and a hard place. And this isn't just us. This is Japan. This is the UK. This is Germany. Everyone that has this fiat money system with nothing backed by anything hard or real and this credit crisis and liquidity crisis globally right now, because we have $31 trillion in debt. And what's different about now versus the late 70s and early 80s, a lot of that debt at the time was longer term debt, meaning it doesn't mature. We don't have to pay. The debt doesn't come due yet. Most of the government debt we have today is short term debt. And again, if we look at the monthly payment, if you think about like a credit card, I could have $5,000 in credit card debt, but I only have to make a certain monthly payment. Well, if interest rates go up as they are, our ability to service debt as a nation and pay that is going to be very, very expensive. And so there's a certain point where it becomes, we're not able to pay it and we don't want to default on that debt. And the Fed knows that. So I think that I do think the Fed will continue to raise rates, but I do think there's a point where they're going to say in terms of not defaulting on our debt as a nation, there's only so far that they can go. So that's where I'm going to rock in a hard place. To get inflation down, we need to raise rates more, but we can't raise rates more because there's this massive national debt that we have to contend with. And so what I think we'll ultimately end with, in my opinion, is some level of stagflation, where you still have high inflation, but the economy has slowed degree and we do have a recession. So I do think that's likely to be the case. I don't pretend to know, but that's the way that I see it.
That could be good or bad news, right? Again, like you said, focus on what you can control.
Right.
And there are many business opportunities that are recession, inflation, pandemic resistant. And that allows you to do what we've been talking about. Find a business that lines up with your wish list and has a proven blueprint where you can focus on controlling what you can control, which is really the execution, right? Thinking back on 2020, the world shutting down, there's a pandemic. Can you imagine that as a business owner? What we did at Lime was we leaned in on the community at Lime and insulated ourselves from the narratives that were on social media and the news. And we protected our headspace so that we could execute. And we just executed. And I say that because that's a great example that I can personally relate to just give some confidence to your point, whether you're in corporate America or business ownership. There are economical implications that are going to affect the way that we do business, that are going to affect the world that we're working in. And regardless, we're not going to be able to escape the fact that there's a recession going on. So, Christian, from your standpoint as a business owner, how does that affect me as a business owner? And what are some things that I can do as a business owner to protect myself?
Absolutely. Well, and here's the thing I would say, because I think anyone listening to what I just said might think, wow, that really sounds like a crappy situation and it sounds kind of gloomy. And I don't mean for it to be, but the data is the data. And so just again, that's where I come in saying, don't lie to yourself, understand where we're at. But I would argue being a natural optimist, I'm a realist, but I still do look on the bright side of things. I think there's going to be a ton of opportunities that open up because the unfortunate reality is people that really shouldn't have been in business in the first place, in my opinion, a lot of people that were propped up by this cheap money that we had available to us, all this free flowing credit that didn't run their businesses the right way. There will be people, and I don't wish this upon them, but again, the reality is there will be people that go out of business. So a lot of your would-be competitors that didn't run their business the right way, a lot of them will go out of business. And so that creates opportunities. There's less competition, less saturation. There's also marketing opportunities. One of the first things that people pull back on during hard economic times is advertising and marketing. So if your dollar is going a millimeter today, well, it might go a mile during a recession because everyone's pulling back on marketing. They're cutting costs. So I would say, yeah, get lean in areas where it makes sense to get lean. And Cameron Harrell, a former COO of 1-800-GOT-JUNK, has fantastic advice on how to get lean. But then don't get lean in terms of the marketing. If you need to pull back a little bit, maybe. But in my opinion, you should almost put down the throttle and do more if you can, because your dollar is going to go that much further. At least don't pull back. At least try to stay the same in terms of how much marketing you're doing. But I think that with fewer marketing dollars that are out there buying advertising, well, it's just simple supply and demand. Your dollar is going to go further. So in any case, I think there's opportunities to be had. And I think if you choose the right type of business that fares better during recessions, and again, this is one reason I like you guys at Lime, because like we were talking about even before we started recording, first of all, painting, like you mentioned, residences, it's commercial, it's everywhere, every wall, there's coating for everything, right? And then you also deal with the upper third, if I'm not mistaken, of home values in any market. And you have multiple revenue streams. So you're going after a demographic that isn't as affected by difficult economic times as most people are. Their incomes are a little bit more stable. It might shrink a little bit, maybe. They might have some tough times, but usually those people aren't hurting as much during recession as other people. So that insulates you guys as a business opportunity. And then having multiple revenue streams. So it's not just one service you're offering. You have many to fall back on, many to offer the customer. And so I think looking at businesses like Lime, and not to just plug you guys, but there are businesses like this out there that are in a good position to succeed. My case for franchising right now would be, do you want to be in this economic environment? Do you want to be the lone wolf charging ahead by yourself? Or do you want to have a team that's with you and behind you and a network of other franchisees all across the nation that you can collaborate with, share ideas with, best business practices with? This is the time to get smart. And you can't get smart just being alone. And again, this comes back to having humility and not having this massive ego, because if you want to do it all on your own, great, good luck. I think those are a lot of the people that are probably going to be blindsided by what's coming. But the people that are being humble and that are being smart, they're going to join franchise systems where there's great franchisees to network with and collaborate with. So I think there's opportunities. I don't think it's the end of the world. And something I like saying to people is, yeah, things are never as good as they seem. That's true. But they're also never as bad as they seem. And so understand what's going on, educate yourself, but understand there's also opportunities and there's always a silver lining in every bad situation. So just be prepared, be educated, and look for those opportunities. And I think you'll be fine.
My goodness, if you can focus on the execution, you can get outside of the fear. Fear is the greatest thief, right? It steals opportunities over days, weeks, months, my goodness, even years. It doesn't just say, hey, I'm fear. I'm affecting your ability to make good decisions, to get ahead, to execute while others are pulling back, to get ahead, because the economy will come around. And if you are able to execute during times where folks are pulling back, guess what? When they come back to the table, you're going to have so much time. You're going to have benefited from one of the most powerful laws in existence, which is compounding, and it's compounding of the results of your efforts, your ability to get ahead and not let fear hold you back. So as you're talking, I'm thinking about what are other points in history that we can look back on that are similar to where we're going in 2023?
Yeah, another great question, because I think some of the most dangerous words you can say that really screws people out of a lot of their own wealth is the four-word death trap, which is this time is different, right? There are many different times throughout economic history that we can look back on that were similar in some ways. There's always going to be something that was different about it. 2008, it was a mortgage crisis. In the early 2000s, it was the tech bubble blowing up and then the World Trade Center and the economic pain that that caused. So there's always going to be, maybe the cause is a little bit different. Maybe there's some underlying differentiator. But while I would agree that history doesn't repeat itself directly, it does often rhyme. And so by understanding these periods, it's helpful. So to answer your question, I think the period of time that's most analogous to what we're going through right now is the late 70s and early 80s, because that's the last time we had peak inflation. And that's when the Fed was hiking rates similar to the way that they're doing right now. And so that's a good period of time to look at in terms of what did we do then? What are we likely to do now? How did people succeed during that time? What did the landscape of that time look like? And try to anticipate, but don't hang too much weight on an anticipation because you never know what's going to happen. So be flexible, be agile, be nimble, be ready to move and pivot, stay lean at a time like this so you can do that. But I think that's a great period in history to look at. The one thing I think that is different though is the fact that we've never had this level of national debt before. So that does make the math a little bit more tricky in terms of our ability to raise rates, like I mentioned. But again, I don't know entirely, but I would say if there's any economic period to study right now, it's the late 70s, early 80s, when we had all that inflation, and study what the chairman of the Fed did at the time, Paul Volcker, who was the only Fed chairman, in my opinion, that had the guts to do what was really necessary at that time.
This time is different. I love that quote there. Christian, we've talked about so many great things related to franchise ownership, matchmaking, and the economy. They're all very important things to consider, especially when you're looking at what for you could be the American dream, getting into business ownership. And so clearly franchising found you. Why do you love franchising so much?
Because of its ability to help people live that American dream. I really believe that with what I'm doing and helping people with is helping them to live the American dream. And that's not to buy a job, it's to buy a business that impacts people, creates jobs, changes their communities. I mean, I think of a lot of the franchise owners in my community that are part of the Chamber of Commerce, the Valley Industry Association, and all the nonprofit communities like I am. And I see the impact that they have. I see there's this Jersey Mike's franchise owner in my area. And one of his managers who started off just making sandwiches when she was just out of high school, now she's his partner and owns her own location. And I mean, how great is that? Mm-hmm. It provides opportunities for growth and development. They give so much money back to local causes, whether it's for cancer, underprivileged youth, or whatever the case is. So the ripple effect of franchising in communities all across the nation and the world really is just massive. So that's why I get excited about it. And it just has the ability to change people's lives. Not everybody is going to start a Facebook. Not everybody is going to start Apple or Microsoft. That's a whole different beast. And I'm the type of person where I don't need to be the idea guy. If you give me a blueprint, which is what I'm paying for in franchising, why would you do anything else other than follow the blueprint if you're paying for that and investing money for that intellectual property? So franchising, it gives you the blueprint. You're in business for yourself, but not by yourself. We've all heard that 1,000 times. It is a cliche, but it's a cliche because it's true. You have the ability to get into business. You have a network of peers that you can mentor younger franchisees. And you can get advice from franchisees that have been here for a while and that are killing it. And everything in between, you have community, you have purpose, you have the ability to make an impact for yourself, for your family, for your community, for the world. And for that reason, I just love franchising because it has the ability to truly change lives.
Well said. And you can just cap that with a theme there in franchising changes lives in so many different ways, changes communities and empowers folks along the way. Christian, it was great having you on the show. I know I most certainly leveled up. I hope our audience leveled up. If anyone is interested in getting in touch with you, how can they do that?
Yeah, so LinkedIn, you can look me up, Christian Dadalak, D-A-D as in dad, U-L-A-K, that's Dadalak like Cadillac, or you can give me a call at 818-472-3170. Anything works.
There you go. Find him on LinkedIn. Give him a buzz. He's clearly a wealth of knowledge, whether you're trying to build your wish list for franchise ownership, or you're just curious about the economy. This was a great show today. Please subscribe to the channel. It's how we are able to bring thought leaders on the show like Christian. The more our show grows, the more we can help folks level up. But also give this video a like, and more importantly, contribute to this conversation. As I mentioned, so many wonderful talking points. Drop some comments, drop some thoughts. What are your opinions on the current state of the economy? And what are some tips that can help franchise owners? And as always, level up.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Level Up with Nick Lopez Show. Remember, it's never too late to get started on your entrepreneurial journey. Don't forget to subscribe, like, and share if you enjoyed today's segment. Catch us again next week and visit limepainting.com for more of the Level Up with Nick Lopez Show.